From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, we'll take you to a workforce forum hosted by Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on a possible challenge to Governor Cuomo in 2018 from actress Cynthia Nixon. And New York State Senate Leader Flanagan is praised for publicly admitting a substance abuse problem. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik held a workforce forum with local business leaders this week. Their key message is more funding is needed for worker training. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there.
The 21st District Republican toured the Clinton County One Worksource Center, where training and job placement skills are taught.
Jeremy found out about an hour ago that he earned his high school diploma.
Following her visit to the resource and adult education classrooms, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik sat down for a roundtable discussion with members of the North Country Workforce Development Board. Stefanik began by noting that she is assigned to the Education and Workforce Committee, supports funding allocated through the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, and the Career and Technical Education Bill that just passed out of the committee.
The Plattsburgh region is really at the cutting edge of how you work together with various organizations in terms of serving the community and serving the economic needs and giving people economic opportunity. Your investment in these programs and your commitment to these programs is critical for our region as we continue to create jobs.
Participants told the Congresswoman it is crucial that the federal government invest in employment training efforts. Clinton Community College President Ray DePasquale noted that the school is about to open a new manufacturing training facility.
We need to make sure that there's funding both for the employees and those coming back to school. Now we're beginning to see the funding beginning to dwindle. And we're sitting out there in a place where it's very hard to move forward with programs with no funding.
Funding workforce training is crucial to economic development, according to the Development Corporation President, Paul Grasso.
It's not only the level of funding, and I believe if you look at 1978, today's funding, accounting for inflation, is about 65% of what the Department of Labor was awarded in 1978. So that's pretty far behind where they need to be. But I also think it needs to be a little bit less restrictive. I think block grants to local areas is a much more effective way of funding workforce and allowing each individual area to determine what its specific needs are and focus more on outcomes.
New York Association of Training and Employment Professionals Executive Director Melinda Mack noted that federal funding is the state's resource for the workforce training system.
It becomes challenging when we start to see those cuts because places who are doing really well economically see those cuts even more drastically because of the way the funding formula is structured. One of the other issues that we're seeing statewide, we're not actually putting the resources together to serve the folks who live in the communities. We do need to create some on-ramps so that folks are able to access either the high school equivalency program, adult basic education, or some creative programs across the state to speed up their entry into employment.
Grasso argued that one crucial element, supportive services, has disappeared from workforce funding.
And I would argue that somebody's paying for it anyway, because if I can't go to training and I'm on public assistance, you know, that money's coming to me for daycare. So you have someone who wants to work and they're being penalized for wanting to work.
CV Tech Adult Education Coordinator Kathy Snow supported Grasso's argument, noting some students take as many as 2 years to complete programs.
They do have a lot of barriers in the funding. We try and provide as many supportive services as we can, but there's not enough money to provide the supportive services that really would get them on their feet.
Following the meeting, Congresswoman Stefanik said that during the appropriations process, she adds amendments to support programs in the district. Workforce training, she says, is the top concern of employers throughout the region.
I think what's unique about our community is the employers are really partnered with organizations to identify what skills they need and make sure that we have a pipeline.
Clinton Community College's Advanced Manufacturing Institute will offer its first classes this fall. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
There's some good news and some bad news from New York State's comptroller. The state's nearly $200 billion pension fund is doing well, thanks in part to the booming stock market, but there are some worrisome signs for the future of New York's finances. We get more on that from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Controller Tom DiNapoli says the pension fund is up this quarter by 2.9% and has increased 11.5% from last year. DiNapoli says he likes to think that he and his staff have invested wisely, but he says a major factor is the booming stock market.
The stock market rally continues. It's been going on longer than most people would have ever projected, right, but we're benefiting from that right now.
But there's a drop in the state's finances. The controller's monthly report finds collections of personal income taxes are down from this same time period last year.
We found that revenues are off by about $1.2 billion compared to last year in our June report.
DiNapoli says Governor Cuomo's division of the budget has already revised down collection estimates and made some spending cuts back in May, so the actual gap is closer to $350 million. He thinks wealthy investors may be holding back on cashing in their capital gains, hoping for tax reforms from President Trump and the Republican-led Congress that would result in lower tax rates.
For many higher-income New Yorkers, everybody's still waiting to see what's going to happen with the federal tax proposals, none of which have really been, tax reform hasn't happened yet.
Governor Cuomo's budget office, in its most recent quarterly financial report, has similar findings. It says tax collections overall were down by nearly $750 million, but that was partially offset by a $350 million bank settlement. But the report says budget analysts are watching it all closely. A big wild card for the state budget is the potential federal changes. The possible repeal and replacement of the Affordable Care Act could reduce the state's funding for health care by several billion dollars, and the tax reform proposals could eliminate state and local tax deductions. Because New York is a relatively high-tax state, those changes could disproportionately affect state residents. Controller DiNapoli says the worry can keep him up at night.
That's part of the problem in analyzing what's going on in Washington. Everything is really like an outline, and there's not a whole lot of specifics.
Yeah.
And I think the experience always is that, if they say, trust us, it's not going to hurt the middle class, well, the opposite happens. And in fact, many of these proposals seem to be geared more to helping the wealthy rather than the middle class.
Cuomo's budget office agrees that there is uncertainty over possible federal changes. The governor and legislature laid out a plan as part of the budget package in April to cope with any potential shortfalls due to dramatic decreases in federal funds. Under it, the governor would come up with a plan to balance the budget. The legislature has 90 days to challenge or change it, or the governor's plan automatically becomes law. For now, though, a spokesman for Cuomo's budget division, Morris Peters, says the state budget remains in balance. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, is it the job of New York Governor Cuomo to bring the Democrats together, Alan? An interesting article in the New York Times. Tensions flare as Cuomo confronts Democratic rift at a reunification meeting, as it was called. The governor suggested to the assembled lawmakers, many of them from New York City, that the leader of eight breakaway Democrats, the so-called IDC, Senator Jeffrey Klein, had a better understanding of the suburbs. That prompted Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins, the Senate Minority Leader, who represents the suburbs of Westchester County, to say, "You look at me, Mr. Governor, but you don't see me. You see my black skin and a woman, but you don't realize I'm a suburban legislator."
That's right, and she is. And the fact is that I have been saying in my columns on the air that the one way that the errant Democrats, or people who've been called by me the traitor Democrats, could be brought back into the fold is if Andrew Cuomo says, "You come back with the regular Democrats, or I am going to have people primary you, and I will support them." That would do it if the governor really were serious. But like Mario Cuomo, this governor likes having the Republicans in charge. We're not quite sure what that's all about. It may well be that both Cuomos are concerned that there would be incredible spending if both houses of the legislature were controlled by the Democrats. And as moderate Democrats, they needed the fall guy, the Republicans, to say no. There is, based on Andrea Stewart Cousins' remarks, the specter of racism in this, because the regular Democrats have more people running the regular Democratic Senate group of color and Hispanics and others than the rogue Democrats do. And when Andrea Stewart Cousins, even though she's walked it back since then, said, "All you see is my black skin," I think she was telling the truth. And it is a remarkable statement from a woman who has been very careful about her words in the past. We've certainly interviewed her, and so have many others. But this is Andrea Stewart Cousins coming out swinging, and it's a refreshing thing to see people say what they think.
Let's go a little further with this. Obviously, we have a 2018 election coming up for the governor, and you intimated it in your comments, but 2020 and a potential presidential run. Two-part question. One, can he even hope to win president if he has this split, fractured Democratic Party in New York? And part two, as an article in the Times by Jesse McKinley earlier in the week suggested, he's got to get through this election with some problems first.
Well, let's take two first. The fact is that Andrew Cuomo has a rougher election coming up for a third term than many people thought. I think he always knew it. He's collected a great deal of money, despite the seeming hypocrisy of saying he's against the LLC loophole, which allows corporations and others to give unlimited amounts of money. He's collected, I think, $25, $26, $27 million for a campaign, which is in 2018. That amount of money is extraordinarily helpful because it scares away people who might run against him. We do see the Sexton City lady, Cynthia Nixon, saying, you know, hinting that she might run. That ain't going to happen. And if she does, she won't win, I don't think. But we have to remember that Zephyr Teachout cleaned his clock, Cuomo's clock, in upstate New York. And it is fascinating to watch. As Nixon says, well, the thing that she would run on is the inequality in school districts. Certainly true. You live in Scarsdale, you're going to get a better education than you live in an inner city in New York. At least that's what a lot of people think, because there's just not as much money to do it with. I think Cuomo has no choice. My instinct, and I've been around a long time, is that Cuomo cannot run for president if he doesn't run from a position of power like being a governor. He's just an ex-governor that way. He has to run for governor. He has to win if he wants to run in 2020. And by the way, there is no assurance that if he wants to run for president of the United States that he can, that the Democrats in this country are going to say, yeah, this is the right guy to carry the mantle here. I think it's more likely that you're going to find somebody who is a more of a progressive Democrat in order to win this nomination. One thing we learned when Bernie Sanders' great popularity showed up was that people want a change. Andrew Cuomo's not the change.
Speaking of change, a Democratic state senator who represents parts of Manhattan and Brooklyn says he is resigning this week because a sliver of heavily invested special interest wields too much power in Albany. Senator Daniel Squadron says he's leaving the New York legislature to launch a national political reform initiative. He announced his resignation this week in an op-ed piece in the Daily News. This does not affect the balance of power. Your thoughts?
Well, that's too bad. He's a good man. We need people like that in the legislature. People have started these kinds of national movements before or tried to, you know, it takes a lot for them to catch fire. From a personal perspective, I think it's a loss for the legislature. Often when people resign from political office to do other things, spend time with their family or to start national political movements or whatever, there are other things in play that we don't know about till later.
Finally, Alan, you spoke to the former head of Governor Cuomo's press office. The man's name is Steve Villano, and he's written a book called Tightrope, Balancing a Life Between Mario Cuomo and My Brother, in parentheses, who was involved with the mob.
Well, look, this man, Villano, worked as the press guy for Mario Cuomo in New York City. We all knew him well, and we liked him. It turns out that his brother was in with the mob and went to jail. He goes to the governor then and to Andrew Cuomo then as a political operative at the time for Mario, and everybody says, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You know, this is ridiculous. Now, of course, the backdrop is that a lot of people were saying that Cuomo was in the mob, Senior Cuomo. He was not. Nonsense. They say that the father-in-law was. There is an investigation by Nicholas Pileggi, a terrific writer, who spends enormous amounts of time tracing down the rumors of any Cuomo connections to the mob and comes out and finds that there were none. So we've never heard it. We've never heard any kind of substantiation of that. Nevertheless, this book that he has written, you know, talks about how wonderful Andrew Cuomo is and how wonderful Mario Cuomo is, something that I believe the senior Cuomo. And, you know, it has to be taken that way. The guy was a press agent for them, and he's still a press agent for them.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State Senate Leader John Flanagan is being praised for publicly admitting he has a substance abuse problem. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
Flanagan, a Suffolk County Republican, issued a statement Sunday afternoon saying he received treatment for alcoholism after realizing that drinking was becoming a crutch to deal with the pressures of his job. The 56-year-old was first elected to the Senate in 2002 and was appointed to lead the chamber in 2015, following the arrest of former leader Dean Skillos. Dr. Jennifer Michaels, medical director of Pittsfield's Breen Center for Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, lends credence to Flanagan's statement, "No one is immune to alcohol dependency."
People are genetically predisposed. We know it runs in families. We know there are environmental factors, and stress is certainly one of them. And when people are genetically predisposed and you throw on a layer of extreme stress, it's like a double whammy that increases the likelihood that people will turn to alcohol to deal with their issues.
The Albany Times-Union reported the statement was released following queries from Newsday. Alan Chartok is a longtime Capitol watcher and WAMC's political observer.
Look, alcoholism is a very serious problem in the United States, and many, many people have it. However, it is interesting that he has chosen to make this a public issue. Quite often, David, when people do that, they're about to be outed one way or another, or they're afraid that they're going to be outed. So they make a public announcement of it. You got to give him credit for it. Frankly, he is not alone. There's a worldwide problem with alcoholism. It probably is responsible for more deaths than war.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo tweeted that Flanagan, who has publicly considered his own run for governor, deserves respect and support for seeking help. Capital Region State Senator George Amador echoed those sentiments.
Openness and honesty is important as we continue our efforts to break the stigma of addiction. I applaud his willingness to lead by example in his own life.
Flanagan expressed hope that his public disclosure will serve as a reminder to others struggling with a drinking problem. A Senate GOP source told the Daily News that Flanagan has no plans to step down as leader. And Flanagan released a statement Monday opposing a plan floated by New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio to tax high earners to fund subway repairs. There's more online, including Flanagan's written statement at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
With infrastructure problems plaguing New York State, and specifically problems with trains in New York City, dubbing it the summer of hell there, in upstate New York's capital region, a more than century-old water line under the streets of Troy that burst in January 2016, setting off a water crisis around the region, has now been replaced. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard has more.
In early January of last year, the city of Troy began losing 8 million gallons of water. A 33-inch, then 110-year-old water line in Lansingburg burst, affecting not only customers in Troy, but in 9 communities across 3 counties. Work began to replace a section of the line in March of this year. Just over 4 months later, the work is complete. Troy Mayor Patrick Madden.
We have since, in this project that we just completed this week, we've replaced just shy of a mile of that old 110-year-old steel pipe. So, and in doing it, we also created some new pathways, so we have redundancy in our system now. So if a line goes down, we have other ways to route water to all of our customers.
When the original pipe ruptured, it took weeks to repair. The new 36-inch ductile iron pipeline comes with the welcome addition of modern technology. Troy Superintendent of Public Utilities, Chris Wieland, recently explained to WAMC that after the pipe broke, it was impossible to repair it with a section of new pipe and what are called repair clamps. That's because the old pipe was made from riveted steel, and you can't simply clamp on a new section without causing leaks.
The only way to repair the riveted steel main was to actually weld to it. We had to grind the rivets off and weld to it, and that's what took the repair so long.
While the numbers are not final yet, Madden estimated the cost of the replacement at $3.4 million. The city got financial help from the New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation.
We qualified for a 60% grant and a 40% loan. The loan is zero interest, so it made it very affordable for us to undertake this.
Madden said the grant will come in around $2 million and the loan about $1.4 million. But the mayor says when the weakest link in the system is fixed, a new link becomes the weakest one.
We do have a plan for replacement in certain areas. Same on our sewer lines. You know, we're looking at where they're weakest, where they break down most, where they're oldest, and putting together plans to address these as well.
Aging Troy infrastructure was recently blamed for sewage overflows into the Hudson during heavy rains. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1732. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.